Welcome to TwerpCast, episode 65, Avengers Cast DVD review. Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. This time, we will be discussing Marvel's The Avengers and its imminent DVD Blu-ray release. I'd like to introduce you to Jim Caswell, TwerpCast executive producer and man who turns green, gets angry, and destroys everything in his sight when he is asked to eat broccoli.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, co-creator of Twerps and the man who envies Jarvis. At least the Avengers butler gets to hang out with heroes as he cooks, cleans, and gets treated like a servant.
He also gets paid and is appreciated.
Heck, you'd just be happy with that last one.
So far, 2012's big release has been The Avengers.
Yes, we did go and see it opening weekend. Yes, we enjoyed it, which we'll go into more detail in a couple of minutes. No, we didn't TwerpCast about it at that particular time, because things were just a little hectic. But we loved it enough that we didn't want to pass completely on the chance to talk about it. So, it's DVD time, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, Jim, let's talk a little bit about the cast before we go into the movie.
Yeah, you know, a bunch of people that, I don't know, I don't recognize a lot of these names. Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, I think Robert Downey Jr. is a rich, drunk millionaire.
No. He plays a rich, drunk millionaire, doesn't he?
Oh, hard to tell.
One of the reasons why he was a great choice for Tony Stark. For the longest time, he was known for being that person.
But honestly, we've covered the topic of Iron Man before. We've got Chris Evans playing the Human Torch.
No. That was last decade.
Ah, my mistake.
It's okay. A lot of people make it. I think if you asked him now, he'd say that it was a mistake, too.
That was among the movies that made it possible for Marvel to start its own studio. Whether you like them or not, they were highly successful, and they paved the way for the Avengers.
As long as we're talking about Fantastic Four for a second, I did enjoy them. They were fun. Were they groundbreaking? Like you said, if it wasn't for them, we probably wouldn't have this now. The fact that they had Jessica Alba dye her hair blonde and left Christopher Evans' hair dark brown when Johnny Storm was known for being blonde, that's just getting far too nitpicky.
Honestly, there are some times in movies where I feel that is too nitpicky. There are other times where I feel like you've made a big mistake. Just for example, I've used this one before, Antonio Banderas being cast as Armand in the Interview with the Vampire movie. I like Antonio Banderas. Don't have a bad thing to say about him. But Armand was supposed to be a 17-year-old boy with hair that was so red it looked like copper. Antonio Banderas did not fit any of that description.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake that they made with the Fantastic Four movie was when Sue Storm stripped off all of her clothes and ran around invisible and then reappeared. I really wished we could have gotten to see more of Jessica Alba, if you know what I mean.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, know what I mean?
Mark Ruffalo as the third Dr. Bruce Banner / the Hulk. This in particular caused a bit of controversy at the very beginning of things, because Edward Norton had played Bruce Banner before this point. And while The Incredible Hulk didn't do very well in the box office, Edward Norton's performance in the role was rather respected. People thought that he did a whole lot better than, say, Eric Bana did in the one before that.
Despite the fact that the movie didn't make a ton of money, it was pretty well critically accepted and fan accepted both.
So when they announced that Ed Norton wasn't going to return and they were going to replace him with Mark Ruffalo, people were pretty much up in arms about it. Of course, as per usual with people complaining on the internet, they never had all of the facts behind what was going on. They just liked jumping to conclusions.
Well, yes. They hadn't seen Mark's performance, and they didn't want to see Mark's performance. They were just being vindictive.
Honestly, I thought Mark Ruffalo did a really good job of picking up the torch and running with it.
He picked up Chris Evans?
He did try to pick up the Black Widow, but hey, who can blame him? But anyway, I thought Mark Ruffalo did a really good job in this.
Arguably, you could say he is the best version of the Hulk that's been on film. I enjoyed Eric Bana's Hulk. That movie didn't strike a raw nerve with me the way it did with so many other people. I enjoyed Incredible Hulk and Ed Norton even more. I mean, that was an incredible movie. So Mark Ruffalo is just putting a cap on it that I liked him even more yet.
I think a lot of people didn't necessarily have a problem with Eric Bana as much as they had a problem with Ang Lee. because the story that he tried to tell using the Hulk was such a mental putz job that it felt more like Ang Lee trying to deal with his daddy issues than trying to make a movie.
I think Ang Lee's movie was just too 70s. It felt like it was cut and produced like a 70s movie with 2000 special effects. Since I've been around in the 70s, that didn't bother me.
We also had Chris Hemsworth return as Thor.
Chris Hemsworth is one of those guys that kind of came out of nowhere, and now he's an A-list actor, which is really going to help him later in 2012 when Red Dawn is released, and Red Dawn Remake was filmed before anyone knew Chris Hemsworth's name.
I think pushing that movie back 2 years is going to do wonders for it, because before you had this nobody in the lead, now they've got an A-list actor who has multi-million dollar movies under his belt. Not that they refilmed it or anything. It was before Thor, but now he's got a name.
They did make changes, though. In order to get it released in China, they changed the bad guys from the Chinese to the North Koreans.
Yeah, and I can't believe the amount of uproar there is online over that one. People really need to just kind of learn how to chill out. Of course, Scarlett Johansson returned as the Black Widow. Thank you, Scarlett Johansson.
I don't know what to say about Scarlett Johansson. They could have got rid of all the rest of the Avengers, and I'd have watched the movie with just her.
Yeah, of all of the many rumors that were floating around about more Marvel movies, people kept on talking about wanting a Black Widow movie. And so many people were saying they didn't care if it had a plot, they didn't care if it had anything, just so long as it had Scarlett Johansson in it. Personally, I'd love to see a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie with her and Hawkeye and Nick Fury and just doing an espionage movie, like a James Bond-esque type movie set within the Marvel Universe. I think that would be fantastic. That way you could have some story and not just Scarlett Johansson bouncing around on the screen. That is a debate for another time. Who looks better in the tight spandex, Anne Hathaway or Scarlett Johansson? Probably the number one debate of the summer.
I really like the whole Christopher Nolan Batman series, and Anne Hathaway was just spectacular. But as far as performances go, God, I'd have to give this one to Scarlett Johansson. And that has nothing to do with the cat suits.
Yeah, I do think that Scarlett Johansson really was the more dominant actress. Just more skill in the craft.
Speaking of actors who like came from nowhere to be A-list actors, Jeremy Renner is, who people had never heard of before The Hurt Locker, now he's an A-list actor with his own franchises.
Yeah, the fact that I can look at this list and just go A-list, 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 wasn't A-list until Avengers, now A-list. What this movie did for these people's careers is phenomenal.
Yeah, like this guy, Samuel L. Jackson. I mean, who heard of him before Avengers?
Okay, there's always an exception to the rule. Although, you gotta admit, getting him to agree to sign to a 9-picture deal to play this character, that was either the biggest gamble in the world or the best foresight ever.
I vote for best foresight ever. You and I, off-air, were talking about there was a period of time that people would, like, just go see a movie because of the star. And that's really, in the 2010s, has kind of disappeared. That now, it's like we need these big, huge tentpole movies with many megastars in them and all of the special effects. And we really need everything to draw you in. There's not, like, a person's name can draw in a movie. But I think Samuel L. Jackson is one of those people that's left over that people will go see a movie because he is in it.
People went to go see Snakes on a Plane because it had Samuel L. Jackson in it. From everything that I heard, it was a horrible movie, but people still went to go see it because it had Samuel L. Jackson in it.
And that's just it. I think that he is, despite the fact that there are many A-list actors, I think Samuel L. Jackson is a draw all on his own, and people will go see his movies.
Although if he makes too many more Snakes on a Plane, that might start decreasing. I mean, you didn't see Sylvester Stallone making Stop or My Mom Will Shoot 2.
Yeah, and you haven't seen Arnold Schwarzenegger do Twins 2 yet.
Now, this next guy really did come out of nowhere for me. Before he was in Thor, I had never even heard of Tom Hiddleston. I almost would like to see him in something else to see if he can play the non-Weasley, slimy character like Loki is.
I look forward to seeing some like of the DVD and Blu-ray features on this, because I've seen interviews with Tom Hiddleston, and without the hair extensions, you can't recognize this man.
I have seen some of the outtakes online, specifically the gag reels, and he changes completely just by smiling. He can still have the hair extensions in, but he smiles and he looks like a completely different guy. Then, of course, you have Clark Gregg as Phil Coulson.
I would not call him an A-list actor, but I wouldn't be surprised if this series of movies changes his career more than anybody else.
Yeah, I can easily see him being in high demand as a character actor going forward, because he managed to play this C-list character to the point where, because of what happened to his character in the movie, people were up in arms.
And even more so, there are many petitions going on to move him into other roles in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, they desperately want him to play the Vision, which I'm just enough of a continuity cop that I actually would have a little bit of a problem with that. But I'd love to see him do other stuff. And then you've got Kobe Smulders as Maria Hill, which led to one of the funniest jokes that I've seen people post online, which was basically the guys from the Avengers laughing at Batman saying, "What do we have that you don't have?" And then a picture of her saying, "Robin." She plays the character of Robin on How I Met Your Mother. At least I found it funny.
And then, of course, the big bad himself, Joss Whedon.
Joss!
We are not worthy. We're not worthy.
We love you, Whedon. Oh, yes, we do. We love you, Whedon. And we'll be true.
But we'd still do Scarlett Johansson.
Every once in a while, I'll see somebody pop something up saying, "Oh, I refuse to go see the Avengers because it was directed by Joss Whedon. He's such a no-talent hack, yada, 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 yada." And I always want to find those people, smack them two or three times upside the head, and say, "Have you ever seen anything that this man has done?" I can honestly say he's one of those very few directors that I've not seen a single thing of his that I did not like.
I would say the biggest irony of Joss Whedon is people can take his writing and butcher it horribly, but when he does his own writing, it's really good.
Yeah. How badly do you think DC is kicking themselves in the butt right now for not letting him go through with his vision of Wonder Woman?
My question is, did a finished script get done? And do they own it? Because at this point, if they own it, they could be like, from the mind that brought you the Avengers comes Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but like you just said, people will take stuff that he has written and butcher it. It could be a great story, and somebody else will get their hands on it, and it will just turn into a big, heaping, smelly, steaming pile of horse manure.
Yes.
Especially if DC head honchos get their thumbs involved.
That would mean they can get their thumbs out of their rears long enough.
Well, from one stinky, smelly, poo-filled area into another, you know, it won't even know that it's been moved.
True enough. Just, for example, take the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which was so bad that Joss was forced to make a television series to correct the error, and that lasted 7 years.
You know, I remember back when I heard that they were going to make a Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV series. And I liked the first movie. Was it great? No. It was fun, camp, B-movie material. So finding out that they were going to do a TV series based on it, I was just kind of like, oh, this is not going to end well. This is going to make it 5 episodes, and then it's going to bomb badly. And I am so glad that I was wrong.
I could not sit through the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. It really just drives me insane. Well, more insane. And when I saw they were going to make a television series, my first thought was, wow, this is going to be a train wreck. I'm like, I should probably watch the first episode because there's never going to be a second one. And then I kept watching the next episode, waiting for it to get bad, and it only got better.
And this is the artwork of Joss Whedon. He takes concepts that people would normally sit there and go, "What? Are you insane? There is no way that this would work as a TV show." He not only makes it, but makes it well. And it is downright surprising to me the number of times that something that he has done goes off the air, and 5 years later, 3 more shows that have almost the exact same description come out. He really is a visionary and a forerunner. He comes up with ideas that people can only hope to steal something half as good, and he rarely gets the credit he deserves.
Well, in the past, he rarely got the credit he deserved.
Yeah. Marvel has been very smart in saying, yeah, we recognize your talent. We recognize what you just did for us. Here, please sign this 5-year contract because we want you to do more of it.
Yeah, I would say among a fan base that has been growing for many years, despite the fact that I didn't like the first Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, I mean, as a writer, he was around Hollywood for longer than just the Buffy television show.
Yeah, if you really want an in-depth history of Joss Whedon, go back to our very first Twerpcast. Because 6 years ago, we recognized his talent. And if we can pick him out of a crowd as a talented person, why on earth did it take everybody else so long?
Well, that's just it. Is this fan base, it's slowly, in a word-of-mouth way, been growing. Okay, we like him as a writer. He's going to get a television show. My television show did really good. He's going to get another television show. And, really, he's been on television for quite a while. And then, when there was no television, because it was a writer strike, he went on the internet and has done probably what is the most popular webisodes on internet history with Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. And so what worries me now that he has this international major recognition by television studios and executives and people know his name now, what's going to happen to his original stuff? What's going to happen to Dr. Horrible Part 2? What's going to happen to the next Serenity movie? What's going to happen the next time he wants to do something in the Buffy universe? He's got two TV shows. They, for years, have talked about doing another spinoff with the character Giles.
And Spike.
But really, if he's got 5 years contracted to Marvel, when is Joss going to do Joss things?
Yeah, what I would actually love to see happen would be for him to start walking in the same footsteps as J.J. Abrams. I would love for him to set himself up as like an executive producer, an idea man, and say, okay, I've got this idea. Hey, Tim, run with this for me. And let somebody else run it for him. You know, he comes up with another idea. Hey, Janet, take care of this for me. And start planting more tent poles that can have his name attached to it, but he doesn't necessarily have to have everyday, day-to-day dealings with. Of course, his track record is, in a lot of ways, similar to J.J. Abrams in the fact that they've had some really big successes, and then they've had some cult hits that never got the audience that the studio wanted it to have and then got canceled. But this isn't JossCast Part 2. We really are trying to talk about the Avengers. So, besides hiring Joss as the director, what else did Marvel do right in the Avengers?
Despite not being entirely the original team, I think they did a very good job of picking the team that would be the Avengers.
Yeah, as much of a fan as I am of the character of Hank Pym, Ant-Man, Giant-Man, Yellowjacket, whatever name you want to call him by this week, having both Ant-Man and the Wasp in this story wouldn't have worked well.
My fear for having Ant-Man and Wasp goes to one of the things that actually annoys me about superhero movies, and that's always having to tell the origin story of every superhero. Just because you get another director to come in and do Batman doesn't mean you have to retell his origin story. I love Christopher Nolan's. I think they're done. I can just have another director come in, just completely start over, say, this is going to be our Batman Riddler movie. My point is, with Avengers, Avengers is about this team assembling. It's not about telling the origin story of Ant-Man and Wasp.
Right. A lot of the origin stories had been taken care of already in the other movies, which is another place that they made an incredibly wise move. Having these individual movies build up to the Avengers was, quite honestly, a piece of marketing genius, in my opinion. The fact that you didn't have to deal with the origin story, that part has already been taken care of. You were able to go right into the action story without having to worry about giving people background information. The only characters that may have gotten cheated slightly in that regard were the Black Widow and Hawkeye, but even they had like a 5-minute scene where they were talking about their history together, and while it wasn't a full origin story, you got the feeling that they have history, and that was quite frankly enough. You didn't need to hear their whole background story.
And I think that actually goes right to my point, is if you know somebody's a hero, you really don't need to know the origin story. Do you really need to know why Clint Barton is a good shot with the bow? How important is that? Do we need to spend a half hour in a movie watching him, okay, now I'm going to shoot a bow at a watermelon. Now I'm going to shoot a bow at a cantaloupe. Now I'm going to shoot a bow at an apple.
Now I'm going to shoot a bow at a grape. Clint Barton and Natasha Romanoff both have in-depth, detailed backgrounds. But knowing those backgrounds weren't going to make you go, oh, yeah, I really appreciate the fact that she's a super spy, or, oh, I really appreciate that he's such a great bowman. You didn't need to hear the whole background history to understand that that was who these characters were.
And in this story instance, it wasn't important to the story they were telling in this movie. And that's not to say it's not important that Clint Barton doesn't have a backstory. But the way he was used in this movie, and this goes to something that I actually heard Jeremy Renner discuss, is he was pretty much like 80% of the movie mind controlled. So you weren't getting any sort of character motivations out of him. You weren't getting any sort of emotional stuff from him because it was just him under somebody else's control.
Hawkeye the Automaton.
And I do kind of feel bad for Jeremy Renner because he is now a very successful actor. And then put in that position, it's kind of like, well, you could have anybody. I'm glad that he was there, though.
Yeah, and I have a very sneaky suspicion that when they make Avengers 2, they'll make it up to him.
Yes, and when they do West Coast Avengers, he'll be the leader.
Oh, I love the West Coast Avengers. And actually, that brings me to another point. I've been a lifelong Avengers fan. While I'm not old enough to have gotten Avengers number 1, I've read back issues. I've read the origin story. I've followed the Avengers through all of their incarnations, even the really, really bad ones. I was a huge fan of West Coast Avengers, primarily because Hawkeye got featured. As I mentioned in Fallcast, I'm a huge Archer fan. Hawkeye is right up there on my top 5 list of Marvel characters right alongside Hank Pym. But I also understood why it was that they were choosing to use him as the mind-controlled automaton. It's because, as part of Hawkeye's history, he's been known to be on the wrong side of the line. Out of all of these characters, he was the best choice to be that mind-controlled automaton, so I understood it within the context of the history of the character, why they chose him.
You mentioned bad incarnations of the Avengers? The Great Lakes Avengers?
Actually, strangely enough, I liked the Great Lakes Avengers. I mean, they were written completely for camp, and I accepted that. And through their various incarnations, I've always been able to sit and laugh with them. And the fact that Squirrel Girl is now actually with the Avengers proper is downright hilarious to me. Mainly, I was talking about the entire time between Marvel's Civil War and when the heroes started being heroic again.
If you don't like heroes being heroic, you can read the New 52.
Yeah. At some point down the line, provided that the New 52 sticks around long enough, we really need to get Ken in here and just do a complete rip on the entire DC line at this stage in the game.
I don't think there's enough time in the day to do that, Jim.
Okay, then we'll take an hour to rip into it, maybe get some of it off of our chest. But hopefully the New 52 won't be around long enough for us to actually do it. Then I can go back to collecting DC comics as well. So, you ask yourself, when does this marvelous, wonderful work of art hit DVD?
Depending on when you're listening to this, either it will be released on, or it was released on,
September 25th, 2012. Now, keep in mind that they are releasing 5 different versions of the Avengers for sale. You have the regular DVD, which has an auto commentary by Whedon and a featurette called Assembling the Ultimate Team. You have the Blu-ray, which has both of the above, plus 8 deleted scenes, an additional featurette, the Item 47 Marvel One-Shot, something called Second Screen, a gag reel, and Soundgarden's music video, Live to Rise. Then you can buy the DVD Blu-ray combo pack that is available in 2 different types of cases, either in the DVD case or the Blu-ray case. You've got the 4-disc combo, which has the 3D Blu-ray, the regular Blu-ray, the DVD, plus a digital copy, and a digital music download. And if that's not enough for you, you can buy the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 1 Avengers Assembled, which is a 10-disc limited edition 6-movie collector set.
I'm going to get one of each, Jim.
Yeah, I don't believe that for a second. But it's people with that mindset that they're doing this because of. Of course, I remember when they did things like this in the comic books too, so I guess it doesn't faze me any. Get all 5 covers! Now, to be honest, I'm glad to see that people who pay extra money for the Blu-ray are getting their money's worth. I mean, Blu-rays typically run twice as much as DVDs do. Am I correct?
Very often, yes.
But to be honest, it's irritating to those of us who haven't upgraded to Blu-ray, who stick with the DVD, and we're getting the bare bones version without the quote unquote good stuff. You know, the deleted scenes, the specially made for video, item 47, all that good stuff. It kind of irritates me that we don't get the neat stuff either. Any other time they'd release a 2 or 3 DVD set, why can't you release an extra disc of all these extra features for the DVD too?
God, I couldn't agree with you more. This is infuriating. One step worse is I've rent the stuff out of the Redbox, and there's been special Redbox editions that have only the movie on it. Even though the disc has the options for special features, when you click on the special features option, it says, this is a Redbox DVD. In order to get the special features, you must buy your own copy. That being said, it's all about the money. Cuba Gooding Jr., show me the money!
There are a lot of times where I just feel like the industry is forcing Blu-ray down people's throats. To be honest, not everybody can go on out and buy a new video platform every 2 years. And it isn't even necessarily buying the video platform as much as the expectation, oh, now that you've gotten this new platform, you should go on out and replace all of your DVDs with Blu-rays, even though they're twice as much money. I have over 500 DVDs in my collection. I don't want to upgrade any of them to Blu-ray. And I know that you can still play DVDs on Blu-ray systems, but I just don't want to have to pay twice as much for the movie.
Well, the good news is, where the industry is headed now, experts think, is they want to get rid of DVD altogether. They want everything to go to the cloud. So, whereas you're paying like half as much money right now to get the DVD, they'll knock off a buck or two more so you buy it electronically. It only exists on the internet. Then you can watch it on your computer or your tablet or whatnot, and you don't actually own it. It's just in the ether. It costs them nothing. They don't have to make DVD covers. They don't have to press DVDs. There's no shipping involved. There's no extra cost to the studio. They just want you to think you own it because you can access it on the cloud.
Pure 100% grade A profit for them. I like owning DVDs. I like owning books. While I've started getting stuff on the Nook, a lot of the stuff I try to download and make backup copies so that, heaven forbid something happen, I don't want to have to go on out and pay to replace the stuff again just because my computer broke down or whatever. And I know that you don't usually have to do that. But I'll be honest, I don't trust big business. I don't trust them to ensure that in 3 years, if I have to replace my laptop, that all my stuff will still be accessible on the cloud and not have to go on out and get a whole new account again.
I think the potential is even worse than that. And I know that people aren't talking about this anymore. But when Amazon Kindle was fairly new still, there was a problem where they were selling books from a publisher who they did not have the rights to sell electronic books from. That publisher sued them, won the suit, and Amazon just deleted it from everybody's Kindle. There was no warning, just one day you turn on your Kindle, and your books were missing. Now, theoretically, you did get your money back. However, if you had just gone out and bought those books, they couldn't have come into your house and stolen them from you.
Yeah, the more and more we move away from the tactile owning of things and convert everything to digital quote-unquote ownership, the less and less control you have over what you actually have.
Yeah, I mean, really? Say you get an electronic copy of The Avengers, and then Robert Downey Jr. 10 years from now says, you know what? My contract didn't have an electronic clause in it. You either pay me more money or get rid of the electronic clause. You lose yours.
Now, normally, I am not a big fan of the spoilers and the, oh, look, we found this pirated copy of something. We're going to put it on our website, but you better hurry up and watch it, otherwise it's going to be gone. But the entity that used to be known as Sci-Fi Wire, now is known as Blaster, did just that with a lot of the special features, including the Item 47. And, well, Item 47 was okay. I was glad that I was able to see it, but it's not something that would encourage me to go on out and buy a Blu-ray system and buy the Blu-ray version so that I could own a copy of it. Since then, it's been taken down again, but that's a flaw with Blaster and not necessarily something I'm going to complain about right now because it got me the chance to see something that I wasn't going to be able to see because of marketing details.
Well, funny thing is, one of the reasons I switched personally to DVD, because you could still buy VHS movies at the time.
Good luck finding one now.
Who would want one now? But that being said, one of the reasons that I made that switch was because of the special features. I was like, whoa, you get director's commentary, you get behind-the-scenes footage, all this stuff that you didn't get on a VHS copy. It just amazed me at everything that was available. Well, now it's 15 years later or so, and we'll use Robert Downey Jr. as an example. Oh, I enjoy his Sherlock Holmes movies. And I could buy a $15 DVD with nothing but the movie, or I could buy the $30 Blu-ray and get special features. And the old me would have been like, oh, I got to get special features. And the new me is like, I just want the movie. I can't spend 15 extra dollars to get, this is Robert Downey Jr. saying, shit, it's just not worth it. So for me, the movie studio is actually screwing themselves because I will buy the cheaper option.
Don't say that too loud. Otherwise, they're going to take away all the DVD options. And honestly, I guess with all of this complaining, that's the thing that bugs me the most, is I feel like I'm being strong-armed into getting the newest, bestest thing, when I can live perfectly happily without the newest and bestest thing. It reminds me a few years ago when I went into a certain major technology store, Best Buy, and I wanted to pick up a new computer monitor. And I just wanted a regular, plain old box monitor, something cheap. And when I asked the employee where the nice basic box monitors were, he literally laughed at me and said, oh, we don't carry those anymore. No one's buying those anymore. You have to get a flat screen monitor. And again, I felt like I was being strong-armed. You have to buy the bleeding edge technology because we're not going to give you a choice in the matter.
Very much so. The planned obsolescence has been around for many, many years, and it's a consumer fact of life, I guess. It's insane, but it's a fact of life. Right now, what is it, 90% of all cell phones are smartphones? I make this vow right now that I will not own a smartphone so long as dumb phones are still available.
Yeah, I don't need a computer in my pocket. I'm in front of a computer almost every waking moment. I don't need one irradiating my testicles in my pocket as well.
I looked at one of the new smartphones that's available recently. It's called Samsung Galaxy 3. One of my coworkers has it, and he was showing me, and it's absolutely incredible. Big screen, brilliant colors, I mean, incredible features, games, internet, Facebook. I mean, the only thing it didn't do is pick my nose. But when it comes down to it, the one thing that I need my cell phone for is making calls reliably.
That is one of the funniest things about all of that I keep on hearing. People are talking about how wonderful their iPhone is, and all the games, and all the movies, and all the texting, and all the everything that they can do. And I'm like, okay, let me give you my number so you can call me. Oh, I don't get good service because of AT&T. I can't make calls on my phone. What the heck do you have it for then? Oh, to play the games, and the movies, and the texting, and all the other garbage. But we rabbit trail again.
Yes, I bet Joss Whedon has a smartphone. Speaking of Joss Whedon, Jim.
Oh, thank you for bringing us back. I wasn't quite sure how we were going to get out of that rabbit trail.
We're done with Marvel Phase 1. What do you think we have to expect from Marvel Phase 2?
I am honestly really looking forward to about half of Marvel Phase 2. I expect nothing but good things from Iron Man 3. Even though I always hated the concept of the Winter Soldier, the fact that Captain America, the Winter Soldier, is coming out, I have a sneaky suspicion that they might be able to do with Winter Soldier what Nolan did with Bane for me, which is to make it a palatable character. I said that I'm a big fan of Ant-Man. If the Ant-Man movie actually gets made, I will be right there among the first people in line. And of course, Joss Whedon doing a second Avengers movie is like candy.
I noticed, Jim, you didn't say anything about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, I remember the original team called the Guardians of the Galaxy, and if this movie was based on that group of characters, I probably would be excited. As obscure as they are, I really enjoyed those comics in the 80s. This group of Guardians of the Galaxy, I know next to nothing about, and there's a reason behind that. And I also left off Thor 2, which is called Thor: The Dark World, mainly because of all the movies in Marvel Phase 1, Thor was actually at the bottom of that list. We went into detail about it in one of our previous Torpcasts. The mixing of the superhero genre and the fantasy genre didn't come across that well on the silver screen for me.
Yeah, it's funny. The first time I watched Thor, I was really kind of disappointed with it, but I've seen it about 3 or 4 times now, and I like it better every time I sit through it.
I think my expectations were too high for Thor, because I really like Kenneth Branagh as a director. And because I didn't feel like it lived up to his potential on the first viewing, it was disappointing to me.
And I'll give you that. I'm an incredible Kenneth Branagh fan. I think he's an absolutely brilliant director. Sometimes I think the only reason he acts is so that he can direct movies. But that being said, this was not up to his top-notch, highest quality movies. But I, like I said, the more I watch it, I think that the subtler it gets, and the more I like it.
So basically what you're saying is that I need to go and watch it 3 or 4 more times.
I would suggest it. I mean, I think Chris Hemsworth was good, but as I said, Tom Hiddleston as Loki, I thought he was brilliant. I agree with you. I think Iron Man 3 is going to be great. I'm looking forward to Captain America. Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, even Marvel deserves a flop every once in a while, so this will give them an easy out. Just don't put John Carter kind of money into it.
Yeah, I have a sneaky suspicion that they're doing Guardians of the Galaxy specifically to build up the Thanos storyline. And to be honest, they probably should have just called it Thanos and have the Guardians of the Galaxy be in it, because I think it probably would have been a more recognizable name for them, especially after Avengers.
Ant-Man, I can't say I'm as big a fan as you are, Jim, but it's being written and directed by Edgar Wright, who is part of Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Scott Pilgrim Saves the World. I mean, I really like Edgar Wright, so I will go see it despite not being the hugest fan. And if anybody listening to our discussion of Joss hasn't figured out how we feel about Joss, probably won't understand how we feel about Avengers 2 either. I think the only thing that we really haven't covered with Marvel Phase 2 is the potential for TV shows. They're in pre-production of a Hulk revival right now.
There's also a S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, which, while I don't see them paying Scarlett Johansson and Jeremy Renner and Samuel L. Jackson to be on a TV show, if it's dealing with various S.H.I.E.L.D. agents out in the field, I think it could still have some potential to it. I know that the Hulk one isn't necessarily going to be set in the Marvel movie universe, but they're talking about this S.H.I.E.L.D. project being part of that universe.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. And thank you for listening to TwerpCast. As always, we appreciate your feedback. Please write jim@twerponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
Thanks for listening, everybody. TwerpCast has been a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012.
Hulk smash!